Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Dr. Supercoach podcast, once again powered by our partners at Code Sports. We are at the end of round five of the 2023 Supercoach season, and sitting down with me once again to talk about everything that we have facing us this week. It is Pistol, mate. How is your week? How's your rank? And can you stop flaunting in the group chat? Because I already know the answers to all those things.
Look, I'm just chipping away at the ranks here. 2-3-6-4.
Yeah.
2-3-6-4 up to 3.5K. So just halving my rank from my extremely slow start where I was out in the 60s, 70s, whatever K it was. But look, the team's come good, Chizo. So I just need to keep pushing, and I'm going to just keep burning through my trades because I'm screwed anyway with the amount of trades that I've used. So may as well just keep going and see how high I can go.
Now, can you confirm or deny that you tried to use 6 trades earlier today?
there was this weird glitch. I'm sure some people have noticed that, like,
glitch, quote unquote,
when you tried to trade in plays, like, the filter disappeared. And I was just like playing around with it, and for some reason it was letting me make 6 trades. So for a brief period of time before I refreshed and it all went back, I had a picture on my screen of me having like lots and lots of little X's next to my trades while I attempted to just use all of my trades in the one round.
Yeah, it looked like me when I go 10-pin bowling. Just a bunch of strikes.
Mate,
I had a 22-76, which I thought was really, really good until I went into game day when the round finished and saw all these 2400 scores, and that kind of deflated me a little bit. But definitely not too disappointed. I do want to give a shout-out to I got hit up on Twitter to be basically told that I only lost this like matchup in this person's league because they had Radagalia on field. And the rat giveth and the rat taketh away is what we've learned so far. But that 22-76 finally brought me into the top 30K. Pistol just squeaking in, went up 6,000 ranks to 29,767. 28 trades remaining as well, so I've got a couple up my sleeve compared to you. and again, I think we're both copping green, but I guess it's just another one that we can add to the rack this year of things that have gone wrong in our team and premiums that have missed. Is just another thing to consider. How I've kind of gone this year and ended up in the 30,000. So I know you said that you started slow, but this year has been pretty struggle street for me so far. Mate, we do have some prize league winners for the month of March that we're finally getting around to. I believe you've got those in front of you. We've expanded the amount of prizes that we give out this year that have gone up from 2 to 5. So there's a bit more love getting around those that are playing prize league.
Yeah, apologies for the delay. We did calculate it at the time. We just got excited and we forgot to read it out in the podcast. So totally our faults, but the winner last month, Cheeky FC Ryan, he scored 6,703 points. So all these people are getting prizes. Frizy's Ferrells, Ashley, 6662 points. And the rank and file, Craig, 6661 points. Please contact JB on Slack or Patreon or however you were at, whatever your preference is. Get in contact with JB to organize your prize. And we did the lucky dip, which we've changed to a player from the bottom 10%. So it wasn't going to last place, or it'd be easy to tank for. So lucky dip from the bottom 10% was Bailey's Bags, Rob, Coach Rob. And yeah, please contact JB. And the complete lucky dip just from everyone was Unleash the Package Robert. If you could also contact JB, lots of contacting JB, please do. And that will get your prizes sent to you. So thank you very much.
Yeah, JB's actually reached out for a small loan of $1 million so we can post all those. but also I should mention that he's been absolutely killing the content over on YouTube. So if you haven't had the chance to jump over to Dr. Supercoach on YouTube, definitely do that, because he's been doing a captaincy video every week. He's getting very good at doing thumbnails, and I highly encourage everyone to cut his face out and make memes out of it, because this was my entire plan all along, was to get him into YouTube so that we could end up with just tremendous amounts of fantastic memes of JB's face. So absolutely go over and check YouTube if you haven't already. The last bit of housekeeping, Pistol, we do have one Cancer Council donation from the past week.
We've got Ben. Ben says, for the 51 points I missed out on by leaving McKenzie on field, thinking he would either play or not play and be covered by the emergency if he didn't. Instead, I copped McKenzie's 14 from being subbed on. So donating for dumb things, Ben, which we appreciate, given Hawthorn announced McKenzie was going to be sub on the Friday and it was posted everywhere.
Come on, man. So missing He's that, just donated. Don't roast
so
him.
So missing that, you know, that's... well, look, we appreciate the donation for dumb things. Certainly lived up to its name this week.
All right, mate, let's jump into some Supercoach. We got some, usually we start with sort of like premium options that we were looking at in the week, but I think it's one of those rounds where I think our choices are going to be dictated by our rookie movements, who we are planning to get out and bring in, etc. So I probably want to start off with the rookies that are probably on the chopping block, and not that we want to get rid of them, it's just a purely unemotional mathematical construct where you're just like, look, you're not going to, as much as I love having you in my team, you're the one that's not making any cash. And I think the first one that jumps out is McKenzie, Pistol. Is that 14? You know, like he clearly is a good player. He's got that the ability to score well, as we saw at the start of the year. But that 14 is going to be in his cycle for another 2 weeks, and it's just, you know, man, like it's going to kill his cash gen for like the next month. Like, we might be back in a month's time, and he's basically like the same price.
So, firstly, you said we don't necessarily want to get rid of these rookies, but I definitely necessarily want to get rid of McKenzie. And that's purely because he, as you said, you'd have to hold him to get this 14 out of his rolling price cycles. So you'd need to hold him for a month. But his role has changed from the beginning of the season, where he was getting a higher amount of CBAs and he was able to put out good numbers. His CBAs have dropped off, and so is his scoring. So even if you're holding him, unless he's going to have a sudden role change, which I'm not expecting at all, I don't see that many good scores coming his way. So for me, he's the first name out on our team sheets this week.
Yeah, and he's gone from 52% in round one, then 25, 17, 7, and 28%. So he's clearly got a role that's not destined for midfield. We had predicted last week that he was going to get an uptick without Will Day as he was suspended. He went from 7 to 28%, so there was definitely a decent
uptick.
He
had a good role when he came on, but it was just...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And Day's coming back phenomenal. In 2 weeks, so, well,
yeah,
after 1 week.
It's pretty phenomenal that you come on as the sub and get 28% CBAs.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, he came on at half-time, so he was... Yeah, the role was there, just didn't score as well. So yep. too many concerns, he's out.
Yep, all right. The next one that I want to talk about is Jinbi. He's probably the one guy that we felt comfortable with so far this year, Pistol, in terms of his on-field scoring potential with the likes of, say, Wilmot and Cowan sitting on our benches. Is he a definite trade out for you? Because he's gone back to back 40s. He's just been managed. We haven't heard anything that he's going to miss a week or he's going to be the green vest in upcoming weeks. But it's another situation where like he could potentially be at the same price in a month's time.
Yeah. So here's where I stand with Jinbi. He's definitely a 60% CBA player. So his role is good. He looks like he's got good scoring potential, unlike other rookies. So I'd feel pretty comfortable fielding him. However, I am worried that the approach of managing him at three-quarter time and subbing him out, I know he got banged up specifically in this latest game. He got a corky, kicked in the throat, you know, just like a whole bunch of things.
Poked in the eye. Don't forget that.
Look, he was through the wars, but at the same time, I think it might be an ongoing way to manage him, and that's what scares me because you're keeping him so you can get that spike game, but if he's only playing three quarters, he's unlikely to be able to reach that potential. And if you're holding him, if you're not trading him this week because of his break even and those 240s in his price cycle, you're basically committing to holding him for at least 4 weeks because you want those 240s to fall out of his price cycle. So I think I'm on my gut feel is to remove him while you can. But if you do hold him, it might work out okay. But I wouldn't be surprised if exactly what you said happens, and in a month's time you sell him for the exact same price.
Well, here's the kind of the contrarian opinion. Like, I'll just throw another stat in there: is that since Jai Cully has come in, he's gone 70% CBAs in both games, and Jinbi. Is that a small...
No, but Dom Sheed's not been playing, so I'm going to cut you off even before you even start.
Yeah. he's had a small reduction, but I don't think it's been massively impactful. So I honestly still think the role is there. Whether his time, TOG, is going to be managed, I'm not sure. I still think that if we held someone like Jinbi to the buys, we're going to have more reliable sort of on-field scoring. And if you are holding him until that point, like he's not at the top of your trade out list, I definitely think he's going to come back around and he's going to make you more money. I don't necessarily see a situation where, he's traded out at the buys for a similar amount of money. I think he's still got like even 50K now and then.
I think he'll be over 300K at some point, but you know, if it might not be worth waiting that long when you can cash him out for now if you're able to get an upgrade and get points on your field quicker, I guess.
Yeah,
that's where I'm coming from.
I guess the question becomes is like, if you're trading out Jinbi, is it because you're able to replace him with someone like Sheezel or a Zeeble as opposed to, because like if you're doing an upgrade somewhere and the rookie comes on the field to replace Jinbi, like, arguably, like, you haven't made that much of an increase. If you're going from someone that has the potential to average, you know, 70 until the buys, and you're bringing Cowan on for a 45, you literally need to be upgrading like someone that's going to be like 30 points more on field than you otherwise would be.
Yeah, and you've got to be careful. I think people might be not over exaggerating, but maybe have too high hopes for what some of these rookies can score, because you look at their average and it's a small sample size and they may have had one spike game such as Oscar Baker, and you see his average is 58 and you're like, oh, you know, I'll cop a 58. But then when you look at his actual scores for the season and you see, okay, well, one of those he scored 95, so the other scores clearly have to be a lot worse than that to be able to get to that 58 average, and then it's becomes a little bit scary relying on them to be on field. But while we're talking about Oscar Baker, Chizo, how do you see him with a 46 break even this week?
Well, I pretty much agree with you in exactly what you're saying. I don't see him with the same upside that someone like, say, Jinbi would be. Like, if you're fighting between like which one of those you're going to trade, I'm going to be trading Baker for the simple fact that he's not a fieldable option. You know, like he's gone 43, 55, 95 with the spike game, and then 47, 53. And it was 61 until scaling. Let's be honest. Like I honestly think that he's had a couple 80 games in there, but they keep giving the points to Ed Richards. But that's just a conspiracy that I've got for myself. But he's just not going to be that sort of player that has the ceiling, or is going to have frequent enough spike games to get him much higher than what he already is. Like, he's already at 250K. There's a lot of rookies that we have that only make, you still have for 250K. I remember, like, Harry Jones a few years ago, he made 250K, and you're like, okay, cool, awesome, you're out. I think we can rest assured that we're not going to start and see Baker come out and average 70 for the rest of the year.
Can I have a hot take here?
Yeah, go for it.
So I think, given what we saw in the preseason where he had that like 110 game, and then round three we saw a 95, I think this Oscar Beck is probably a hoverer of 250K mark, and that you could probably sell him at various times throughout the season at this price.
And it'll be the same price, yeah.
If he's a bench option, as you said he is, because I agree, he's not an on-field option, and if he's a purely bench option, I think you can kind of just let him stay and wait for that next spike. I mean, he's got Fremantle this week and then Hawthorn at Marvel. And if you manage to hold him to that Hawthorn at Marvel game, that might be the next spike. And then we potentially could see him jump up to over 300K and you'd be really chuffed with that. I just, given his break-evens in the 40s, he's not really going to lose money that much. He's just going to literally hover until the next spike game. So I am leaning towards just keeping him on my bench until that occurs, just not playing him ever.
Yeah, I guess the counter to that and the why he's seemingly so obvious as a trade-out, because he seems to have kind of not really peaked, but he's made like 85% of what we expect him to make, is that there's not a whole lot of trade-out options this week that you can do a whole lot with. Like, maybe true. Cowan, you know. Cowan's even worse. He's like a 40 averager, right? And he's only 200K. And, like, you could hold him for another month and he gets to 220 and it's like, well, I still can't do anything with him. You know what I mean? So it's sort of like he just fits that mold where he's sort of topped out. Yeah, you could hold him for a bit longer, but he's got the cash that's going to allow me to do something. Like, you that extra 55K, I think it is, between the two might make the difference. And the next name that we jump into is Davey. Davey, again, is going to find it hard to get back into the Essendon side that performed so well on the weekend, even though he does seemingly play a really good role for the Bombers, and I think they really like him. He copped that shoulder knock, and he got stood on late in the game. Like, he got banged up a little bit. But again, like, you're trading out Davey this week to try and, like, you're obviously, if you're trading out Davey this week to try and do something with him, it's because you're using a boost. And you're probably using that boost because you don't get enough cash from Davey.
Yeah.
And so that's where the argument becomes with, let's use Baker because that extra 60, 70K actually makes a difference.
I guess if you're saving a boost, I can definitely see the point in that. But, you know, well, it saves you a trade if you're saving a boost as well. So then, use Baker. But Davey's an interesting one because I see him also as kind of a hoverer, but he's going to hover around like the 210K mark or 220K mark rather than the 250K mark. And as you said, when you're hovering around the 220, it doesn't get you anything. So it's still going to take a downgrade at some stage to be able to
think that Davey is a life for life for Baker. If Davey keeps playing games until the bye, you'll get him at 250.
Yeah.
He's got 58, 45, 66... No, he definitely can't do that.
I think Baker can get to 300. But, that's, I guess, my hot take difference.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you time it after a potential spike, then you can get him for 300, whereas Davey, I honestly think, by the time that I'm looking to trade him out, he's going to be 250. Yeah. That's just the way I see it.
So,
although they've got Collingwood, Geelong, Port Adelaide, Brisbane, Richmond before they play Eagles and North. So there's absolutely every potential he either doesn't get brought in because of the big games that they've got there, or when he does, he gets 20.
It's true. And he's still going to be a sub-risk anyway on top of all of this, because Snelling came in and was really good. And, they might play smaller or whatever, but some games they might not play smaller, and then he becomes a sub-risk.
But he also he's a sub-risk for being subbed off. I don't think he's the type of player they want to sub on. Like, we're losing quick. Let's sub off a tall guy and put Alan Davey in the forward line where he gets three touches for the remainder of the game. Like, I feel like they're going to pick a senior body that can come on and make an impact.
Yeah, it's possible. It's true. Well,
all right, next one.
Yep.
Unless you got something last on Davey, I'm about to move on.
No. Go on.
I was going to say, the reason that we're talking about Baker and such is because the next player I want to name is Chandler. And while he's got an average of 73.8 and he is still projected to make another 12K this week, he's a guy that's getting very close to 300K and potentially topping out. He's gone back-to-back 50s. If he does another 50 this week, he's only making like 5K and suddenly you've got a 285K player that's going nowhere. So he's still got a little bit more upside than Baker. They've got a very similar break-even, but I think the potential of Chandler playing well this week and scoring like a 60-plus is probably higher than what I expect from Baker.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I mean, we'll talk about our potential trades later, but yeah, if I could do my trades and hold Chandler over Baker, I would do that in a heartbeat. I just need that extra 20-odd K, so leaning elsewhere. But Chandler's upcoming fixtures are easy, as you said. He could pop out a 90 in any one of his next four fixtures and just kind of reset that cash-making ability. And unless, I guess it goes two ways, right? Because if he puts out a third 50 in a row and just kills his cash gen, he becomes almost a must trade out purely because you don't want to lose the money that he's already made. So that one, you're opening yourself up to being forced into a trade the next week if you do hold him and it goes badly. So
yeah, I agree.
It's a tough one to balance. Yeah.
They do have Richmond North, GWS, Hawks in the next four, so it's definitely a good run for...
Surely he does well in one of
those
games.
You would think so.
Yeah.
He's gone 93, 71, 90, 59 and 56. I mean, even if he gets a kind of a 60-plus in there, like he's not going to be making a stack of cash, but he's sort of one that you feel a little bit... Like I'd feel more comfortable playing Chandler. Like if I was... like. Organizing my trades and strategically trying to figure out, like, if I bring in a forward rookie this week as opposed to a midfielder, that means I get to play Chandler on field as opposed to someone like, you know, like a Cowan or, you know, Davey is suddenly your M8, like whatever situation you might be in. I would be more inclined to orchestrate my trades in a way where I get to keep someone like Chandler on field and sacrifice the likes of Baker, even though they could be very, very similarly priced at the same time.
Yep. No, I'm with you. I think that's very fair. But
also there's no problem if you're in a situation where it's like, I need the extra 25K to do the trade I want to do, and that's just Chandler's the one that's sacrificed.
Well, yeah, because it's not a guarantee that he has a good score. I guess it's part of the risk reward. But Chizo, I think any other player not mentioned has at least one more week in them before they need to be culled. I think that's the
or they haven't
way.
Or they haven't made enough like Cowan,
or they haven't made enough like Cowan, so it's not worth discussing really. But what about
trade-ins?
Yeah, trade-ins. Okay,
who's hosting this place, mate?
I don't know. Hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I keep talking
over you. If you
want to
take over the
apologies.
If you want to sit in the hot seat, you can. You just got to speak up and let me know before the podcast.
I didn't even have the run sheet. I'm just taking over. It's like this is where it's going now. We came up with the perfectly planned run sheet. I'm just going. Doing whatever I want to do anyway.
you're chomping at the bit because you want to talk about some trade-in options. I'm going to start with Matt Roberts from the Swans. I said to you off air like 2 or 3 weeks ago that what's the bet that Matty Roberts is a guy that's going to play every game to start the year and he'll still be bargain basement price because he just keeps being the sub and as soon as he comes on, he's going to be someone we want. That has absolutely turned out to be true. And we've seen him pop out of like, I was actually surprised when he at that 90. Like I can't say that I noticed him like a whole lot, but he was just doing the job that the Swans want. And the thing that we know about Horse is that when he brings rookies in, it's because he planned. He's not like an in and out type of coach. When he brings them in, they're going to play.
Yeah. Well, look, Roberts is for me that pump and dump type of player. I think he's going to come in for that quick. He's going to come in for a short time, a good time, but
not
definitely
a long time.
Not a long time. He's going to make us money in the next couple of weeks because of this 93, and then likely as Swans get their players back from injury and get their team a bit more settled, I think he might find himself back as the starting sub. So
yeah, I agree.
When that happens, you know, it'll be time to jump off. But currently this week, he ends up with a break even of negative 22. And I would think given their extended injury list and how well he played, I mean, look, he played very well. It wasn't like he won like a massive amount of ball. He just didn't turn it over. I think it was going at 100% efficiency until the last quarter. And he just did all the right things. So that's how he accumulated up to 93 points. But his role's all over the place. He was playing on the wing. But when he's played as a sub before, he's gone forward. Sometimes he's gone in the midfield. It's really... Swans have such a versatile team. They've got players that can play literally anywhere, like Mills, and Parker can get thrown all over the place. So all these players, and Roberts is kind of not to the same extent as those guys, but he'll just play wherever the team needs him. So it's pretty hard to predict how well he'll go. But all I know is that a 93 means for the next 2 weeks, he's likely to make money. If he manages to put out like a 60 this week, that will be huge for his cash generation. He can make 100K in like 2-3 weeks. So
yeah,
I think he gets at least one more game, and then we're just praying he gets another one after that before being the sub again. It's against Geelong at GMHBA Stadium, so it's like the worst possible matchup for him. But I think you just got to back, you got to back the numbers in. He had incredible VFL numbers. He was basically getting around 30 touches in like the last, I don't know, 8-9 weeks. So he's a good accumulator when he has the right role. I just don't think he's going to get that same role in the AFL team as, you know, the Swans team in the VFL. So, yeah, basically, Chizo, I think what I'm getting around to saying is he's my number one trading option for this week.
Yeah. Are you concerned that there's so many Swans players that are sort of like a couple like weeks away? Like, I know Franklin's only like maybe a week or fortnight away. Hickey wasn't far as I'm concerned. The two McCartans had concussion that might potentially be available this week.
Absolutely.
Like there's literally three or four guys that could suddenly be available. And he's really only gone from the sub to getting game time because they're missing players.
Yeah.
That's the part that concerns me.
He's in that, you know, 20 to 24 range of best Swans players. So given the 23rd is the sub, you know, on any given week he might miss the game entirely, be the sub, or just scrape in. And like one thing with, you know, you can't predict his injuries and they keep happening and you don't really know if players are going to come back and when they're going to come back. And I'm just going to not pass up the opportunity because at worst case, he gets one more game and makes me 50, 60K and then becomes a sub and still has a negative break even. So we'll still make another 10K. I like the fact that he's got DPP now because he racked up his fourth game clutch before the positional changes. So getting that forward mid eligibility is also really handy. Just adds a little bit of bonus value to him. Otherwise, you also need to compare him to the other rookie options. And I think that's where I start to get more confident in Roberts because of my complete lack of confidence in the other rookie options that are available, Chiso.
Well, let's speak about his direct competition in terms of like a midfield rookie spot, and that's Johnson from Fremantle. Once again, someone that's been playing as the sub for a considerable amount of time so far this year finally gets a full game, and I thought he was good. I didn't think that he was really shooting the lights out at any point, but a 67, I think it was, against the Gold Coast as they kind of got run over the top in the first half and then just powered their way back towards the end of the game, and the Gold Coast really tried hard to choke that game. Again, the thing that I have concerns in terms of Matty Johnson is that like they clearly like him. We touched on him in the preseason and he was in on our bench, in the midfield bench, for a considerable amount of time until we realised he wasn't going to get a spot. He's been fringe the whole time, and then this week was when Fremantle was like, hey, we've not had a great start to the year. Let's throw a few magnets around the board. Sam Sturt came in for his first game. Who was another guy. Like, there seems to be a rotating door again between like 18 and 24 in their squad, and he could literally just be the sub again.
Yeah, I'm quite concerned about that for Matt Johnson specifically, and that's because Will Brody came on as he was the sub, and he came on. He's been killing it in the waffle. So
he had like 40 touches or something last week.
Yeah, I was expecting him to come in, and he's too good for the waffle, and I imagine he'll find his way back into that Fremantle side from next week onwards. I don't know if he'll be dropped again, but it just means that the role that Johnson then takes, like he was kind of getting a bit of mid time, and then Brody came in, and then Johnson got pushed to like this wing half forward sort of hybrid role, which isn't typically a great super coach scoring role as well. So I just have, I guess, role concerns for him as well as job security concerns. At the same, you know, in the same breath, you got Fifu's out indefinitely, I think it is, and that might be good for Sturt, but I don't know if that's great for Johnson specifically because he's not forward, and Switkowski's gone with that injury as well, and I'm not sure, probably a couple of weeks until he's back. And then you've also got O'Driscoll, who I would think is a starting winger. Well, at least I did think it was starting winger. He missed, and then it came out today that he just like had the flu. So he's going to be fit this week. So does he just come straight in for Johnson? Probably not. They probably give Johnson another week because he did perform quite well. But I'm just quite scared of what is the Fremantle team, who are complete shambles, really. I'm just going to call it how I see it.
Wow, where did that come from?
Well, I mean, we were talking about starting.
They're a rebel. No, what a rebel.
They had such an easy opening draw.
They did, and we thought they'd be freaking 8-0.
Well, not far from that, because we were like, oh, yeah, you know, the reason why people are considering Fife is he might kick a bag every week, you know, just because of their draws being unbelievable. But, you know, you're looking at them and they've only won two games and have looked terrible, quite frankly.
And they really should have lost against the Suns.
They really should have lost against the Suns. They haven't looked good. And I kind of want to stay away from them because I think they'll be chopping and changing, trying to find a winning formula. And that might mean, I mean, it might mean good things, I guess, for the rookies, but I feel like I don't want any part of this. I guess if I'm desperate and no one else is named, I could go there, but it's not a comfortable pick, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I'll throw another complexity to it. Brody was the sub, he had 48%. Jaeger had 65% and Johnson had 66%. So even in the game where he was starting in the 22 and was not subbed off, he still had basically the lowest possible time on ground out of the team, which indicates to me that like he's one of not that he's not important, but there are plenty of names ahead of him in terms of their squad, which really, really concerns me. Yeah, and I guess the best thing about their injury list is they don't have anyone sort of, unlike the Swans, they don't really have anyone that's like pressing to like come back immediately like this week. So we obviously could see him selected again and be faced with the same questions next week.
Yes. Well, that leaves us really with the other two-gamer, which is Dylan Williams from Port Adelaide here.
Oh, Constable. Oh, two-gamer. No, okay, right, gotcha.
Yeah, Constable. Yeah, he's an option. No, he's not an option. Let's not go there. So had a quick chat with JB before the podcast just for that extra Port Adelaide insight. But essentially, the interesting thing with Williams is that he's been playing off halfback, so he's listed in Supercoach as a forward, so just keep that in mind. And this week, Jonas went out and Burton came back in. So he managed to survive Burton coming back into the side, which we were a little bit worried about. And then DBJ, Darcy Byrne-Jones, who typically plays off the halfback, was named as the sub. But then when he was subbed on, sorry, that was in the previous game, he was a sub. This week, he played, but he played as a forward tagger on Dale, which was a role that I don't know if any one of us would have expected him to play because he's played as a defender his whole career. But he was really good on Dale. Like, he shut Dale down, and then DBJ kicked two goals of his own. So is that a role that is going to continue going forward? I'd say at least it's a role they've got to try again, given how they won the game and it was a really successful play. So it makes me think, okay, well, Williams will probably play next week. But then you've got players like Orazio, who is clearly talented but injury prone as hell. And when he comes back, you'd think he probably knocks out DBJ. And then where does DBJ go? Does he just not play, or does he go back with Williams? Is that a future us problem that we don't care about and we just take Williams while we can? I don't think there's I think it's one of those cases where if he plays well, he can stay in the side, which I feel is better than Johnson purely because I feel like there's a limit on how many games Johnson can play, even if he does play well, just because of the volume of midfielders and wingers that Fremantle have and the chopping and changing their sides, whereas technically William could play every game for the rest of the year if he just plays really well. So
yeah,
I like that. But I'm also scared by him having to perform so well, and his scores haven't been, you know, there's no 93 that Roberts scored, for example. So he needs to actually play consistent amount of games to be able to make money. So
yeah,
I think he's my second. He's my number two trade-in option this week.
Yeah. And there's another thing I'll touch on is that, or a couple of things. You mentioned Orazio. Port Adelaide really don't have an injury list. Like, there's Fantasia that I can think off the top of my head that's like a fortnight or 3 weeks away from his leg. I can't remember.
He's always injured.
A hammy. But yeah, well, he had something. But they really don't have anyone that's like, oh, I'm only getting a game because of this injury, which is like sort of what's happening with, say, Matty Roberts with Sydney, for example. He's sort of getting a game on merit. Hinkley, again, is one of those coaches, very similar to Longmire, is that when a rookie is ready to come into his team, he plays them.
Yeah.
And the fact that he got two full games, he's not used as a sub, they don't really have injuries to worry about. We know what Hinkley's like. It sort of indicates to me that he would be perfectly fine as like an F8 bench option that's just going to score like 50s, like what we already have on our bench in that case. But I feel more confident in his job security than Matty Roberts or Johnson personally based on that. But I just don't like...
So is he your number one trade-in option, trade downgrade option?
I wouldn't necessarily say the number one based on cash gen, because Matty Roberts and Johnson are probably going to outdo him for cash gen if they're playing as part of the 22. Whereas I think Williams probably over the long haul is probably going to play like more games and be unsub affected by those, if I was having a guess.
Yeah. So if I were to ask really the identical question but put more pressure on you, what would your answer be?
Yeah.
Is he your number one downgrade option?
No. Okay. I'm still going to go with Roberts by the fact that he does have that spike score. So even if we are getting 2 weeks out of him, you could very quickly make 80 to 100K. Whereas with Williams, if he does end up being the sub in, say, 3 weeks' time, he's probably only made the exact same amount. And then his scoring potential his cash gen is completely kaput. So that's the only reason I wouldn't put him as number one, because if he's getting games the way that Port are going at the moment with the lack of injuries,
and
I
winning.
Feel more confident.
And winning.
Yeah, I feel more confident in it.
Nah, fair enough. So I think Chiesa, if I just have an outward view of rookies on the horizon, we've got Corey Wagner from Fremantle, who didn't really set the world on fire with a 39 listed as a defender mid, 117K. He's probably going to stay in the side until Chapman's back in 3 weeks. So he might get a price rise. I mean, you never know what can happen, right? Someone might get an injury and he might stay a bit longer, but that would be my basic guess for that one. You've got, from the same team, you've got Sam Sturt again, forward though, but dependent on probably Fife's return. So I can't really comment on that. I might need some more information on the next couple of weeks, and we get to watch him again anyway. And then Seamus Mitchell.
I think Fife's like, sorry if I can tell you, Fife's like TBA. Like they've literally got no expected timeline of when he's going to be back. Because the plantar fasciitis is just one of those injuries that is literally just don't walk on it, don't run on it, don't even look at it, and just wait till it's better.
Yeah, so it's a bit unknown. So we might need... Maybe in the injury updates on the Tuesdays they put out, they might give us more of a time frame, see how he's tracking. And then, Mitchell from Hawthorn, defender, midfielder, played, I guess, in a Scrimshaw-type-esque role down back for Hawthorn, but their team without Day is a little bit all over the place. I mean, Finn McGuinness was also dropped, and he might, or I would think he's probably going to come back in at some stage because he's relatively good.
Well, I've got Laird or Dawson this week.
Well, I mean, look, Connor Nash can play a run with Roll as well as a bigger body, and Dawson, I feel like that's a really good size-wise matchup. I would not be surprised in Dawson's current form if we see Nash try and run with him. And then I don't know how negative they can be, but if they want to go super negative, they could also try and tag Laird. But I think Mitchell will need to, again, be one of those guys that needs to play really well to hold his spot. So I don't know if I'd go early because, yes, he scored 67 and looked good, but in this week, if he, let's say, scores a 30 and is terrible, then he's straight out for Will Day, who then comes back from his suspension, and they just do a little bit of a team shuffle. So I wouldn't be going early on him. And that means the rookie outlook as a whole, Chizo.
There's also Ned Long.
Ned Long too.
Is he forward? No, he's a mid for Hawthorn. He was playing sort of like half forward role from memory.
Yeah, he was doing all right. I think he's probably the guy. I mean, look, Wingard's now out with that severed tongue injury, and I'm not sure what the recovery time is on a tongue injury. For some reason, I think, is it going to be long? I wouldn't expect it to be long. It heals fast.
It'll get stitched up. The tongue heals real quick.
Yeah, so he's probably going to be back soon. I would need to wait and see on a lot of these Hawthorn guys, but the general outlook of rookies is relatively grim, I would say. So yeah. Is this a week where we just, is it a good time to boost, to be able to take advantage that there's, you know, three rookies that are potentially decent this week, and should we take two of them, take three of them? What do you think is a good strategy, keeping in mind the outlook on future rookies?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You've also got Corey Warner for Sydney that got his first game but was pretty trash.
And obviously the just bad role.
Obviously the GOAT, Will Gould, got his debut, only played 2 minutes of a game and scored 39. So he's going to average 200 when he actually gets a full game, which is brilliant. So that there are a few names that are kind of sneaking under the radar. But again, the common theme with all these guys is that you'll bring them in and you're going to be getting 40s to kind of spruce your cash gen, which is not great. So if you have the likes of, say, Roberts, Johnson and Williams that have like kind of upside of 60 plus, I think you do want to take a couple of these guys. I don't necessarily think that they are of such quality that it's like, gee, I have to get all three of them this week.
Yeah.
Because I think two of them is going to be fine, and whatever third one you miss out on is not going to be so good that you can't pick up someone next week or the week after that's going to do a very similar job.
Yeah.
So I would definitely be picking two that you'd like that work in your team. And also there's a couple to get, like the reason we're talking about these three is because the likes of Luke Edwards from West Coast, his elevated price, I think, is 193 or 195K, something around that. And he's not going to be performing to such an extent that he's going to get to 300, 350K and sort of make that trade worth it as a player that we're going to be having on our bench. Ned Moyle is maybe going to get one or two more games, depending on whether the Wits rumours are true, that he's probably going to need a month to in total to recover. But he could also not be playing this week if Wits is back. And Humphrey from Gold Coast as well is a very highly talented player. I think pick 7 last year, but he's just not, he doesn't have the scoring prowess.
Yeah, super coach wise, no good.
Yeah, so I would certainly be looking at those three this week, or keeping an eye out for the guys in a fortnight's time. So again, next week's time when they've had their second game. So with those four names coming through, with Wagner, Long, Sturt, Mitchell, Warner, Gould, like we're probably going to find another couple names in there that it doesn't mean we need to do two this week. Would you agree?
I mean,
I misspoke. Three.
Yeah,
three.
I think I wouldn't do a triple downgrade that some people might be considering. I think if I'm ranking all of those rookies from their one game sample size of the other ones, my top two would still be Roberts and Williams as my one and two. So that makes me lean towards either double downgrading or boosting if you can afford an upgrade there and you have the correct, you know, right players to trade out. So I would lean towards boosting to grab Williams and Roberts. But again, as you said, someone might match one of them next week unexpectedly and you boost next week instead and get those guys. So yeah, plenty of ways to play it. That's probably just how I'm feeling about it, Chizo. But can I throw a curveball to you, Chizo?
Yeah, absolutely.
Play a curveball, putting you on the spot here. If you think some of those rookies are unlikely to make that much more than 100K because their scoring potential is low and sub-risk and stuff like that, would you consider jumping on somebody with a really low break-even? Hypothetically, let's talk about Chase Jones, who has a negative 31 break-even. He was sub in round three and he scored just a lowly 34 before playing the next two games and scoring 93 and 116. Listed as a defender, 308K. The break-even of negative 31 means that if he can manage to put out an 84 average, I know it's very randomly specific, he will make approximately 87K, but you also get the points on field. Is he somebody worth potentially looking into and trying to make your money through a mid-pricer rather than making your money through a dodgy rookie?
I'm going to personally say no, and that's primarily coming from the way that I play. I know that there's been different strategies employed since the trades and boosts and stuff have been implemented. I think that it's more of a headache causer than a headache solver or reliever in that you're going to, you could potentially have this $300,000 person that you've just invested in, like you've literally spent 50 grand to go Baker to Chase Jones, and I just don't have the evidence behind Jones to expect that he is going to do that 84 average. And then if he does do that 84 average, you know, is 70, 80K or whatever you mentioned going to be enough to justify that position? I think I would honestly, a lot of these guys that we're talking about, you know, the Roberts, the Williams, the Johnsons, and, you know, even the one-game players, they're all bench options. They're not players that we're expecting to play on the field. I feel like Chase Jones would be a bit more of a headache than a problem solver.
Yeah, look, Adelaide have looked quite good lately, I would say, and they're playing Hawthorn, so I would expect them to win in round six. But they come up then against Collingwood and Geelong and then St Kilda, then Bulldogs, then Brisbane, which is far from ideal. I think they might get a little bit of a lesson. I guess we'll wait and see. Apologies to Crow supporters. But it's going to be a little bit of a different class of opponents that they've been playing. I know they just played Carlton, who are really good, but let's just ignore that for my point. But if he were, this is what we see with mid prices quite often when, you know, we've looked in the last couple of years when these mid prices in like the 300K range score, you know, 180 and then their break even's like minus 40 and you're like, oh, I'll get this guy in because he's going to make a lot of money. And then, yes, the first week they make 50K and you're like, okay, great. But the problem is that they put out a 50 score to make 50K. And then the next week, suddenly their break even's like 35 and then they put out another 50 and you make 7K and you're like, oh no, I've traded this guy for back-to-back 50s. He's made 57K and I now need to trade him out because he's going to lose money. And then it's an immediate trade out. And you're like, well, was that really worth it? And then you're not really sure. So you'd really need to be picking Chase Jones at 308K, expecting him to be going, you know, around 90 to be able to just like continuously make enough money that it feels worth it. Otherwise, he becomes like a very danger. Like you'd almost have to trade him out immediately. And I worry playing Collingwood in round seven that he puts out a stinker because, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's still Chase Jones who we've known for the last couple of years, and he's been prone to absolutely terrible, poor, lowly Supercoach scores. And I know he's highly rated and was, you know, high draft pick and all that stuff, but I'm not 100% convinced. I did watch him. I know he's looked really good the last 2 weeks, but I'm not 100% convinced that he's going to be able to maintain that for multiple weeks in a row still. Could be wrong. And yeah, it just takes one of those 50 scores, which I think he's very capable of. And then you're like, oh no, what have I done? Why is he in my team? And then you have that bit of a panic moment. So it's a no for me. It's a yes for your draft waiver. Absolutely big, big yes. That's kind of just how I'm seeing it. But at the end of the day, this could be the breakout season that we've been waiting for Jones. And he, you know, just goes on a stream of 85 pluses and makes you 150K and you're really happy.
Yeah. He's also, I think he's scored 80 plus twice in his career before the last fortnight. So it's like you're either getting Chase Jones hoping that he has a big score against Hawthorn to keep his break even low, and then whatever he scores against Collingwood, it doesn't matter because he's going to make 30K on top of that, and you make 100K in a fortnight. That would be the play if you're looking to doing it, because if you're looking at holding him, yeah. I think that's a losing hand.
It's just how the thing is, like, if you're investing 300K into a player, which is essentially what you're doing when you're buying him, it's stopping you from upgrading somewhere else in your team most likely.
Yeah.
So
opportunity cost.
That's right. It's the opportunity cost. If I were to downgrade McKenzie rather than paying 40K to upgrade him to Jones, you know, I could be doing a boost this week. I could be downgrading McKenzie, downgrading Jinbi, and then upgrading Chandler or Baker to, you know, a premium option and gaining points rather than, I mean, you're obviously trying to gain points doing McKenzie to Jones, but you don't get closer to finishing your team because you have won fewer premiums.
Yeah. Okay, this is a little bit, we've sort of stumbled into this conversation, Pistol, from that question. I was going to go through some premium upgrade targets, but we'll get to that in a second. What I want to touch on, based on everything we've just said, I would love you to explain the importance of upgrade cadence when we get to this point of the season, because we talked last week about, you know, last week was really the last chance that you had to do any last minute sideways
yeah.
that you're absolutely desperate to do. And from here on out, it's just boom, 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 get the one in, one out. And away we go and start getting these premiums into our side. How does someone like firstly, what is the importance of upgrade cadence? If you can explain that to people. And secondly, what would, not just Chase Jones, but hypothetically bringing in an elevated player like that due to your upgrade cadence for the following weeks?
So to keep it as brief and simple as possible, Chizo, if you are downgrading rookies and upgrading other rookies to a premium and you're doing it quickly, so using your boosts, you're getting a premium player and higher scores in your field quicker than everybody. But once you're one ahead, you're then one premium ahead all the way up until the other person fully upgrades their team. So it has 22 premium players, because you won't, if you keep your upgrade cadence up, they won't catch you if you get one premium ahead. And that just means that you might have, well, we're going into round six, you might have 9 weeks of an extra premium score on your field over the rest of the competition or over your rival or your league or whoever you're playing, because you keep that cadence up by constantly upgrading and they never get to catch up until they finish their team and you're finished your team. So it's important that you kind of either keep up with the pack or stay ahead of the pack in being able to get these premium scores on the players. But asterisk, at the same time, back to what you said early in the podcast, that doesn't mean you're trading out, like, you know, a Setterfield and a Hopper and bringing in, you know, Laird and a Cowan onto your field, you know, because your total points there is, you know, what, 180, and you're trading out Setterfield and Hopper who might be going 185. So you end up losing in that way. So it's about trading the right rookies out for, I guess, the right premiums, but it's you got to take into account who you're losing as well as what you're gaining. I mean, I see some people talking about trading out Ashcroft, and I'm like, why? I mean, he's averaging 77. It's certainly not harming you having him on your field, and if you really calculate who you're losing And it's not just a calculation for this 1 week, right? Like, I could downgrade Baker, who's on my bench, and upgrade Ashcroft. And I'm like, great, I've got an extra 30 points on field. But then next week, because I no longer have Ashcroft and no longer have Baker, I'm going to need to, like, bring on, you know, have to do a boost and put on some terrible rookies on field because I don't have that Ashcroft cover.
Yeah.
And everyone else has him as well. And then I'm starting to lose that 30 points that I had potentially just gained as well. So it's like a puzzle piece where you need to really try and downgrade from your bench to upgrade your field. That's like your ideal scenario. And when you can't hit that ideal scenario, you try and get off like the players that are the least highest averaging. I know it sounds simple, but layman's terms, the least highest averaging on your field is the ones that you then want to upgrade or switch off out of your team. So for example, if you do have Baker as your M8, you know, doing a Baker to Roberts, even though it's a fielded player, might not be that much of a points difference. So then that's the player that you target rather than targeting somebody like Ashcroft to upgrade on your side. So where I'm going to link that to Tom Green, Chizo, and say, now this is why it's important to hold Tom Green, you know, for that 1 week, because one, other people are potentially boosting to bring in an extra premium. And if you're just sideways trading Tom Green, they're one premium ahead, because what's going to happen next week? Tom Green's coming back and they've got Tom Green and the extra player and potentially bringing in another premium. And you've just traded Tom Green to a premium and then you've just brought in one. So you're still minus one in terms of the premium. So it's more beneficial to hold players that are injured or suspended during your upgrade time than before the upgrade time, because no one was upgrading last week really. So it didn't matter if you sideways traded an injured player. But this is the time during the upgrade season where it matters more about holding onto your premiums if they're missing, you know, specific weeks. The only thing that makes it, I guess, okay to trade a injured player in this time is that if you've got a boost available, you might still be able to do one downgrade, one upgrade, and then a sideways on the injured player, and you keep up your cadence because you've been able to still upgrade in that same week.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Chizo?
It absolutely does. What I'd love you to do right now is just go back to your dashboard and bring up your total score, and that's going to bring home this following point. So in 2021, I had numerous discussions with you about my upgrade cadence, and there was 1 week where I brought in side bottom in my forward line who was like averaging 90 for the year, but it just gave me another premium on field. And then there was another week where, and I didn't really want side bottom, but mathematically it was like, that's how I keep my upgrade cadence.
Yeah.
And then it happened a few weeks later when I got Doherty as like one of my defenders. Again, he wasn't the 115 plus that year. He was like a flat ton, but again, it was an upgrade cadence. And if we just use like, if we just make a really basic assumption that a rookie is 50 and a premium is 100. So you're making 50 points a week, and we assume that everyone is like picking up one final player from the round 15 by going into round 16. So we've got 10 rounds at 50 points. Really basic assumption that is totally not 100% realistic, and I understand that. But that's 500 points, right, that you could potentially have by having that extra premium compared to your competition by having the upgrade cadence. What's your current total score, Pistol?
So it's funny that you said bring up your thing, because I just didn't do that when you asked me to. But my total score is 10.958.
10.958. I'm 10.654. So you're 304 points ahead of me. Quick maths, I probably got that wrong. But for argument's sake, you're 3,000th and I'm 30,000th. And there's 300 points difference. If you've got that upgrade cadence going, and over an extended period of time you're continuously making extra points ahead of your competition because you've got on that upgrade cycle, that's going to correlate to you rising in the ranks over time. And if you, like, if I had 500 points extra right now, it'd just be it's the difference between being where I am and being top 1k. So I absolutely love that discussion, and I love how it always goes. Whenever you and I have these types of like analytical discussions, it goes from let's keep it really, really simple, and 15 minutes later, it's like, okay, that was as simple as we could make it. And I genuinely love that. So I hope you got something good out of that. And Pistol, I hope you got your breath back, because we are going to talk about some upgrade targets now. And the first thing I want to differentiate between is, should we be looking for the Dawsons, the Took Millers, the Olivers in our upgrade cycle, or should we already be looking for value in the likes of, say, a Parrish or a Sicily or even a Sinclair that have dropped in price since the start of the year? Is there a particular way that you want to start your upgrade cycle?
So this is a funny one, just after what we've just spoken about. And if you were to get and pay up, you know, the 700-odd K for Oliver, the impact that might have on your team is that in the next week you can't upgrade. But if you were to get, let's say, Parrish.
It's 150K difference, basically.
150K difference, and it might mean that then you're able to get another premium player next week compared to somebody who got Oliver. Then for the next 10 weeks, if we go back to the simple maths, you know, you're making that 50 points, or 9 weeks, because it'll be the next week, you get those 50 points per week, those 450. Then you're relying on Oliver in the last 7-8 rounds to make up the difference over the players that you brought in, which he might do, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
especially
absolutely.
As a captaincy option. but also, there's a lot of the times you rather have be the ones with the points in the bank than the ones chasing down. So there's other risks as well, as you just might run out of money and you might just never get a premium team if you keep paying for the most expensive players every week. So with that being said, you need to try and find the balance between picking the players, and obviously the balance is based on the scores and their what you're projecting them to score for the rest of the season. You need to try and find the best value, not meaning price, but score for price. You pick the best value players instead of constantly the best players, because the value players is going to let you keep your upgrade cadence going whilst also maximizing, when you do have a completed team, being able to, you know, maximize still your points that your team's able to score compared to other teams. So with that being said, Chizo, I think Oliver is probably too expensive to get right now, and he needs to drop a little bit more before he's able to not stop all of your upgrade cadence. I think Dawson is probably in that range, or at least very close to it. The difference with Dawson is he's playing as an inside midfielder now, which we didn't know 2 weeks ago. So now we were buying Dawson the defender, and he was bad value at 600K as Dawson the defender. But then Dawson 600K midfielder, good value, you know, because he's an unbelievable midfielder. But now he's on the point of, what is it, 650K. And you're thinking, well, the people that started the year at 650K are people like Took Miller, you know, the guys that can average 120. And you're thinking, well, is Dawson as good as Took Miller as a prime mid? And you got to ask yourself that question. If you think then yes, then I guess you could find value in taking the Dawson route. But if you think, well, actually, it's a small sample size, maybe Dawson's not that good, maybe he'll go 115, which is still massive, but then he just isn't as good value at that price. And then you might want to just get him later in the season or at his buy, and then stick with players who are better value. Chizo. Took Miller is an interesting one. I've come up with something, Chizo, which I might be using to try and justify my own selection of bringing
Mate,
Took
go
Miller
for
this
it.
Week.
I love it. This is great.
So Took Miller up until round 14 last year had 85% average time on ground, and there was a high of 89% time on ground and a low of 80%, so it was all in the 80s essentially. But then after that round, for the rest of the season, he had an average of 89%, which included 5 games above 90% time on ground, including one of 93%, which to me seems like a considerably noticeable shift of a 4% time on ground increase, which 4% doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're scoring, you know, 1.2, 1.3 points per minute, a 4% time on ground increase is like 6-7 points. Like that's a huge. He went up to 126 average during that time of higher time on ground. he came back this year from injury with that hammy, I believe it was, in the preseason. So his first game back, he had a low time on ground. But every game since round one, he's followed the same time on ground pattern as he did in the back part of last year after the bye. And that's him still going at that 89% time on ground. So I think that is a little bit of value built into his price, where he's probably, I guess, setting himself up, I mean, using last year as a make a larger sample size, probably for that, you know, a 125 average or so. And he's got coming into a really easy draw where he's got North Melbourne, Richmond and Melbourne, West Coast, all of which leak really big numbers to midfielders. I mean, look, minus Witz is not there, which is bad for him, but I think he's just built in the last 2 weeks with a 122 and 127. Break-even's 113, so he's going to hover roughly around that price, but I do think if you want to take advantage of the North Melbourne fixture, you know, this is the week to probably jump. And then, Cheeser, the last point, I know this is too much on one player, is he's got the round 13 bye, which is just more added value because he's going to alleviate some stress from those other bye rounds. And if that saves you, you know, a donut, you're adding in an extra 5 points per game, basically, to his tally. So there's a lot of pros here for me to consider boosting, because I could boost and get Tuk Miller or not boost and get Darcy Parrish. But I'm considering using one of my valuable boosts to get the better player, because I think long-term it's going to be more beneficial for my team. And I worked out if I don't boost, I still can't upgrade it next week anyway. So if I can't upgrade anyway next week, then I'm not. I may as well get the better player this week. And that's kind of how I'm coming up with that decision.
You might as well grab someone. Yeah, interesting. I think Tuk has always been one of those players that go under the radar and is like under-owned. Yes, he had that injury at the start of the year, but I just feel like he's honestly one of my favourite players in the AFL, man, particularly like SC-wise. Like there's not many players that you can, doesn't matter which game you watch during the season, he's running from contest to contest just as hard as every game you've watched him beforehand. Like there's no slacking off when it comes to Tuk. So I absolutely love him as a pick. I'm a little bit like, obviously the advice we give is super biased based to our personal preferences and the way that we play the game. And I think everyone that listens to this podcast has a profile of the type of player that I am. And one of those ways for me is I always am penny pinching, always looking for value. And Tuk fits that as well. Like he's already dropped 40K and you can get him at 224. He helps with your buys, but it's also, he's also one of those players that I feel like you could pick up for a similar price off his buy. So you don't need to take him into round 12. Whereas like the people that don't have Stewart and don't have Tuk Miller for round 12 this year,
for round 13,
could potentially round 13.
Bugging me.
yeah, sorry, man. They could potentially have two premiums up on you for that buy because they haven't, they've got a full side of premiums around it. So yes, you're going to have the 18 to fill your week out of, but they could make 100 points on you that week by having two premiums over two rookies.
Don't forget, Chizo, if you have 21 premiums, let's say we're not fully premium, but we both have 21 premiums, it's best 18. So I'm going to get 18 premiums versus your 18 premiums anyway.
Yeah,
so it's lower. Yeah. It's lower chance, I guess, of there being an advantage to your opponent by you having these two guys. So that's kind of where I'm when I'm talking about the value of the round 13 guys. That's why they have extra value.
Yeah, cool. And the reason that I sort of preface that by saying like he is underpriced and he fits my value, but there's also some other aspects that I consider. I like the sort of players like the Sicilies and the Parishes. Even like a Sinclair, these guys have all sort of like dropped like between 50 and 70K, I want to say.
Even more,
even more than that. And like take Sicily, for example. I don't think there's many of us that are expecting Sicily to not be a trade-in option at some point. I know Sicily's got like a I want to say 154 break even. I really should have looked this up.
Yeah, close.
Well, it's reasonably high. So he's probably going to drop in cash this week. But he's the type of player that I'm going to be looking for. We mentioned it before. Parrish is literally like 145K cheaper than Oliver. And let's say, you know, magic number is 5,000. Is Oliver going to out-average Parrish by 30 points or at least 25 points? I reckon that's a really tall ask for even someone like Clary for the remainder of the season. I would put my chips behind Parrish to go within 25 points to go that. And so if I'm going to buy a midfielder, I'm looking for someone that's had a bit of a slow start to the year, has definite upside, has 110 capabilities in him. And I just feel like this is the first time I get to own him. Like, I've never owned him since he's been a premium pistol. Like, I tried to stay analytical and try. That's all it is. I don't care what his price is. He's coming in.
I was going to be like, but how do you think Setterfield affects him? But at the end of the day, I don't think that's going to matter to you right now. You're going to get your boy into your side.
I went from helping to being a hindrance.
No, look, part of Supercoach is meant to be having fun. If you can do it and he's going to make your enjoyment of the season better, then do it. That's half the fun of Supercoach.
I totally agree that Setterfield playing midfield time is definitely going to be impacting him. But even on the weekend, he had it was like 33 or 34 touches and a bunch of marks, and he was the leading contested possession getter for the team. I feel like he has that with or without Setterfield. He's going to be a good scorer. And again, he could be a 110 plus. I'd love him to be 115, but I am really starting my upgrade season by trying to penny pinch. You mentioned that if you get Took this week, you can't upgrade this week.
Yeah.
If I get Parrish, sorry. If I get Parrish this week, I'm going to have 110K or something in the bank. Chuck in some boost and stuff there, I can really start of sort of grind this upgrade season as quickly as possible to try and make up for the fact that I've had so many injuries and underperformances from premiums and you know, Tom Green being suspended this week potentially as well. So that's sort of the line that I'm heading down. So I'm looking at the likes of Sinclair as well is another one that I'm potentially looking at. Do you agree that that's sort of like a good way that, or at least one aspect of upgrading that people can do to be kind of highlighting these top end premiums that have started the season poorly that are likely going to bounce back and jumping on those guys?
Yeah, so I really like Sinclair and I really like Sicily to finish, you know, top six of their lines. I think I'm a little bit more scared of Darcy Parrish. I think from where my perspective is coming from this year is that because of all of those injuries that I've copped at the beginning, you know, I've said from the last podcast where I was complaining that I'm down 10 trades and I hadn't made an upgrade yet. So my trade situation is very poor, which means I literally can't make a bad trade like for the rest of the season because I don't have trades to waste. So if I'm going to bring in a guy, I would probably bring in, you know, a Sinclair. Maybe not Sicily this week because of the break even, but I'd probably bring in a Sinclair over a Parrish purely because I'm personally more confident in Sinclair's ability to finish top six of his line than Parrish's to finish it as a top midfielder. So given that's the case, and well, I've got money for Tuke Miller anyway, so I'm going to grab him, but I can't take one of these, I guess, more riskier punts purely because I don't have the trades to burn if it goes sideways for me, Chesu. But to answer your specific question about Sinclair, I think Jack Steele is meant to be back next week. Is that right?
I have absolutely no idea how that is even remotely possible, Pistol, but that is the word that is on the street. Pistol, a lot of people know I work in the medical field. I've seen the clavicle fractures before. This is one of those situations where there's not only there's a fracture, but there's an AC joint dislocation as well. Like that clavicle is absolutely messed up, and the only way to really fix it is to chuck a steel rod from one side to the other, like straight down the shaft of it. Like they could potentially put plates on the outside and like have multiple prostheses in there holding it together, but like that injury is a 2 month recovery time. How can he be back in a fortnight with a big plate of metal holding him together? Like, it's one of the worst shoulders I've seen from a sporting accident in that respect. And I just, he's gonna be like, if he comes back, that is like freakish. But also, I'd be super cautious about like the performance that he could put out with that. Like,
will he be able to move his arm?
it's going to be super, super rigid, and it's going to be painful because it literally has not healed. He's going to be playing with a broken shoulder, only held together by the plates that are there. And being an in and under player, like, it just... And again, the Saints have started the year really well. Are they concerned that, like, giving their captain a rest for a fortnight is going to completely stall their momentum this year and they desperately need him back? Like, maybe. Surely they can... I don't know, man. Like, it seems ludicrous that he could come back so quickly. Like, well, it's crazy. It's, secondly, whoever shared that X-ray, this is totally off topic.
It is.
That someone needs to get reprimanded by ARPRA. Sharing someone's private information like that with all their name and details and all that stuff is absolute no-no in this profession. And that someone did that is just... That's bad. That's abhorrent.
Well, I'm glad you got that off the chest, but it's great news for Jack Sinclair because in the first two rounds when Steele played, Sinclair had 0% CBAs and 9% CBAs. So it was essentially running off the back, put out two good Supercoach scores, 110s, great, looks good. Then Steele goes down. Suddenly Sinclair's got 21% CBAs, 38% and 39% against Collingwood. And we've said it before, these roles where you're kind of in the mid, but you've got your little toe in, you got your little toe out, and you kind of dip back
do
in.
Do the hokey pokey.
It's just not, it's not good for consistent Supercoach scores. So, yes, he had that 63 against Dons, and he's dropped his price a lot, and then put back out two good scores. But I mean, it was a 90 against Collingwood. I don't know if you count that as a good score, but a decent enough score. I would feel better knowing that Sinclair is going to be in the back line when Steele returns, or that's what at least I'm expecting to happen. And whilst he might not reach the same heights as last year because he isn't getting the same share of kick-ins, so he's just naturally losing, a couple of kicks per game, I still think he can go 105+, and he's good enough, and his price is good enough. But his break-even still, he's going to be a hoverer, Chizo. I'm going to bring back that term. So it's what I'm going to be calling these guys. It's going to be a hoverer. I think you'll be able to bring him at 540K across the next 4 weeks or so. So I don't see him as like a desperate trade-in, but I do think he's a very good trade-in.
Well, I'll tell you why that's why I want Parrish, because if Zach Merritt's out this week, Parrish gets more midfield time, and we know he loves an Anzac Day game.
He does. Yeah, if he gets a 160, he's not going to be a hoverer. He's going to be above 600K.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm worried about. And so, like, not getting... Like, if I'm going to roll the dice, this is the week I'm going to roll the dice.
Fair enough. I can't blame you for that one. Sicily, I think I'd leave because of his break-even as well. I mean, do I have concerns that he took one of 16 kick-ins last week? Probably. But
what?
He's still scoring.
Whoa.
It's a lot. It's a lot of kick-ins for him not to take.
What? Hardwick! What the hell? 11.
It's a lot.
It took 11? Oh, yeah, my goodness.
It's a lot of disposals just to be given.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
He had less than Seamus Mitchell.
Yeah, they did give him some kick-ins. I mean, look, Sicily, I think he's been playing poorly from my eye test. I believe he has not put together a good four-quarter performance the whole season. His last season, he definitely looks better, but the positive is that he's still scoring pretty well. Like, he had one bad game because he got absolutely torched by Geelong. You know, whoop-de-doo, most defenders get torched by Geelong's forwards. That's not the end of the world. And he's not playing super well, and his floor is still basically 90+. Like,
yeah,
that
incredible.
Seems very good to me. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on him, and he's someone that I feel like is you need a time when to get him because he's only going to be cheap for a short time, and that's the guy that I think I want to jump on when he drops to his lowest.
Yeah, so he's had a poor year in his standards, and he's gone 111, 99, 112, 76, 91. Yeah. And he's playing poorly.
Yeah, I think he's been poor. So
yeah,
we'll be and clearly not getting kickouts as well. So that there's all room for improvement with that too. So yeah, let's keep an eye on that. I think Chiesa, another guy that I think is a really good trading option this week for those that didn't start him. Canelio at 485k. How do you see him as a trading option?
Get him if you like being frustrated.
Who doesn't?
And
who,
that was play that was coach? That was the exact same statement we had last year. So he's averaging 96 for the year, which is unders, but the amount of times that he's either on 20 at halftime or 80 at halftime only to score a flat ton is phenomenal. Like it is a talent that very few players have. And copping no attention in the meantime. But he's gone 143, 107, and 102. They're his good scores. And he went 58 and 71. And both of those games, like he had like 30 touches in each of them. Like it was crazy. I absolutely still think that he is going to be in the top echelon of the forward line. A lot of people were put off by the fact that we're going to get Bailey Smith. Well, we got Bailey Smith with the DPP edition. And they thought we were going to get Petrarca, but because the Bombers were flogging him, he got a lot more midfield time and lost his DPP. Yeah.
So, another reason to dislike Essendon.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas like Canelio, you know what you're purchasing. There's no kind of like... We've got another six or seven rounds to kind of wait until the next DPP edition, which will be the buyers, like when we're really kind of finalising our team anyway. So I think he's a perfectly fine choice in terms of the fact that I think he's got a lot of value in him now. I'm really, really hoping that he does average 100-plus for the year, which I think he still will, but he's such a frustrating own. So to summarise, yes, I like him as a potential upgrade.
485k for a guy who should be top six on his line feels like a really good pick.
Cheap.
Like, well, conversely, they're the ones I would target last year. Was it that, you know, the Dawson and Sinclair, I got in back-to-back weeks at 480k, 480 and 490k. Yep. You know, set up my season. So this is the type of picks that you want to get because it lets you upgrade again next week.
Yeah. Well, let me throw a curly one. Are you going Canelio or Goulden if you didn't start them? They're within $4,000 of each other. Goulden averaging 99.4, Canelio 96.2. Are you taking one over the other?
That's a tough one, Chiesa. I don't like when you put me on the spot. I only like putting you on the spot. I probably still take Canelio.
Goulden hasn't had the floor this year, but he also hasn't had the ceiling.
Look, honestly, I think they're both really good. If you don't have one of them, I would still probably get the other. I just also kind of feel like Goulden is going to be a hoverer, whereas Canelio might not be a hoverer because he has the ceiling to go really
And
deep.
He has the role.
He has the role and the ceiling.
The difference between the two is that Canelio is going to have consistency in role and Goulden is going to have the role that Horse gives him that week, which may be 40% CBAs, maybe 60%, maybe 20%.
He just scores whenever he's around the ball. That's basically how he gets all his points straight away. No, that's a good one, Chiesa. I think there was somebody else, but not for the life of me.
Mills and Walsh were two names that I wanted to talk about. Mills is... particularly JB was mentioning Mills as a potential starting option because there's not many players in this competition that can go 180 then 200 back to back and suddenly price you out and you can't get him. Unfortunately, his role this year has been pretty gross, and so that 70-80k that he has lost is primarily because he's not playing a super coach friendly role. Pistol, would you agree?
Yeah, look, he was playing down back last week, but not in like a good way down back. It was more, you know, when he got thrown down back, it was because they were losing last year and then the ball was around there more and he steadied the ship. He just started back and then played back the whole game this week. It's just not good. I think he's too good at too many things and it's bad for Supercoach, so I'd be staying away. I'd, out of those two options you just said, I'd be way more interested in Sam Walsh.
Yeah. Well, Cal Mills has got 148 break even. He's going to lose some more cash. We're going to get him sub 550k, which is what we all jumped on Petrarca last year.
Yeah, I don't think I'm getting on him in a where I don't know what role he's playing.
Correct, and he hasn't been terrible. He's obviously a fantastic player. He's gone 94, 123, 103, 87, 97. He's got that floor. He's got literally everything we want in a premium except consistency of role. So I think at some point he is going to be a purchase in our midfield.
If he gets to the right price, but he's got to get much lower than what he is.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Just throwing out names to have on our radar. Another one, Pistol, is Walsh. I know he was one that you were a little bit cluey about because now that he's back from his, I think his back injury that he was recovering from, he played pretty well on the weekend. I watched that game and I thought he was good without being great, sort of getting the cobwebs out. But he still racked up the pills, still put on tackles, still was effective in affecting the scoreboard. So I think he's one that's going under the radar in terms of names that have come up for potential upgrades in the next few rounds.
Yeah, so I think Walsh is a better pick this year than last, and that's because of the way the games have been played, like AFL games, you know, the faster pace, higher scoring. The ones who seem to suffer were those big contested beasts, and they have seemingly dropped off a bit, but the ones with more outside game are doing a little bit better. So people like Walsh who are just going to be in these scoring chains and, you know, possession chains, I think are going to do really well in Supercoach. And given he can run all day, he's just going to get a lot of the pill. And when you get a lot of the pill, you're going to score really well. So I'd be pretty excited to get Walsh this year if he didn't have the round 15 bye. I can't take another round 15 bye guy because of my trade situation. I don't think I'll have trades to sideways trade at the round 15 bye, but if you have a lot of trades and you want a really good POD in the coming weeks, add Walsh to your watch list because I think he could be an absolute star this season. Chizo, yeah. Before I jump on, I'm going to ask you one that throw one back at you. Caleb Sarong, 573K, has put out a lot of points this year. Started with a 70, but then has gone 101, 146, 100, 146. How do you see him? You know, do you see him as a breakout year, pushing into the top eight mids this season? Where do you rate him?
The problem is he's had two breakout games against really poor opposition. So he's gone 70 against Saints that are going well, 101 against North, which is unders for how they're going. Then he went 146 against West Coast, 100 flat against the Crows, which are playing well this year, and 146 against the Gold Coast Suns when they fought back. He has the attacking midfielder role that I wish Andy Brayshaw had and is kind of benefiting because of that. I think that there is going to, this is a breakout year. I think that his scoring is inflated based on two scores against competition where he doesn't really get the same attention from a bigger bodied midfield that's going to take control of the game. I think he's good. I don't think, I think I need to see a little bit more before I'm prioritising Sarong over someone like Parrish, who's 20K cheaper.
Yeah.
Mills, the exact same price. Cripps, the exact same price. There's a lot of names around there that I have far more confidence in than a really small sample size against Sarong, where it's only two of his, like the majority of his scores are not worth the price that you're paying him for. And the two that are were against clubs that we really can't get a reading on what his average for the year is going to be. That's my problem.
Yeah, I think that's all those names you said, except maybe Mills, are better picks than Sarong. Really, if you remember the beginning of the season, we were talking about how I've mentioned it in this podcast, how Fife might be an option. He's going to kick five goals every week for the first month because he's got great fixtures. I mean, same as Sarong. He had the same great fixtures, and now it's starting to get really hard, and Fremantle have not looked good at all. So I worry about what's going to happen when they play good teams, when they're playing poorly. If they're going to get smoked, you know, their Supercoach pie starts disintegrating, and also he might not be able to get as much of the ball or be in control. Like, I do think he goes, you know, 105 plus, but he's averaging 112 at the moment, and I don't think he can keep that up for the rest of the season. But hey, you know, happy to be proven wrong, but you're still paying like 570-odd K. It's still really expensive.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're getting a bargain.
That's my problem. You combine that with the games that you've actually performed in, and I'm not 100% sure. Like, he's literally a fantastic player, and this is a breakout in terms of being an AFL footballer.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether that translates to Supercoach is another story. The last one that I do want to mention, there was I was actually tossing up with him last week, is that the Seagull, Jake Lloyd, not playing the same role that he was a Hall of Famer defender for us. But he has always been renowned for that consistency. So far this year, he's had a really good start. he's not, and it's not coming from kick-ins, which is the thing that he relied on for a long period of time. So the question is, has he had that 1 year dip where Lizard took more kicks off him? And now he's kind of found a way to work himself into that. So he's gone back-to-back 120s after starting the year with 100, 102 and 93, which is kind of what he did last year. He just seems like that guy that's just going to keep getting it done. I just don't know whether it's going to be a 105 average for the year or more than that.
So for starters, he played super well last week. He was really, really good, like defensively and offensively. Typically, his defensive side of the game has been lacking, but he was really, really good. I think the way that the Swans shuffled their backline with Rampy out and the McCartan brothers, they had Blakey playing taller rather than being utilized as that free running halfback, which Lloyd played, and that's why he scored well. When there's concerns over when the McCartan's coming back and Rampy's neck injury, I think it was a 1 to 2 weeker or something like that. Because of the uncertainty, I think Lloyd is the one that's going to benefit from that. So I think he'll score well in the immediate short term. My concern is what happens when everybody's back. I know at the beginning of the season they had everyone and he was scoring well, but last year he didn't. Yeah. And not much has changed from the back line from this year to last year, really. Like, it's the same personnel. They nearly won the flag last year. They made it to the grand final with Blakey as the main distributor, and Blakey is a Jet. So I don't really know if he's able to keep it up for the whole season, but I do expect him to keep it up in the immediate short term.
Yeah, yeah. No, I certainly agree. I think he's got that – I think he's going to go 100 flat. That's sort of – I don't see him like being a low 90s like he was last year. I think he becomes that 100. But then the players that we've just talked about, we talked about James Sicily, who after this week is going to be priced less than Jake Lloyd. I think he is very easily someone that I'm going to be looking at as an upgrade ahead of Jake Lloyd.
Yeah.
Just because he's got so much higher upside.
Yeah. No, I think so as well, Chizo. But I'm going to quickly, before we move on, just throw one last thing at you. If you were choosing between Laird, Neil and Tuk Miller, where would you be going? Because all of them have dropped in price. They're all within 18K or whatever it is, 15K of each other. Do you have a preference there? Because not even a preference. Rank them. There we go. I made it somewhat harder.
I'm gonna go Neil, Tuk, and Laird in that order. No, I'm gonna go Tuk, Neil, Laird.
Tuk, Neil, Laird.
Okay. I think Neil and Tuk are priced very like very very similarly. And. Oh, actually, that's the whole point of this conversation.
It's very hard. Thanks, it's very hard.
but the round 12 buy, I think, is super helpful. I think the problem with Neil is he's gone 95, 100, 117, 102, and then 176. So his average for the year is flattered by that high score against a really poor North Melbourne, where I think Tuke's gone 113, 106, 109, 122, 127. And Laird has just been so up and down. Like, I don't know what Laird we're going to get from week to week. So he's had two good captaincy scores, 135 and 147. And he's had a 50, a 114, and a 97 in there. So
realistically, that's one bad score.
Yeah, it is one bad score. But if we take out his one bad score, he's still going to be averaging worse than the other two. Like he still had a worse start to the year than Miller and Neil for sure.
I think Neil's worst for me, but I'm splitting hairs. They're all good trading options. I think Laird is worth a gamble just because you know what he's capable of. But if I had to go on eye test and how people are performing currently, I would do Tuk, Laird, Neil, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I'd probably agree with that.
Sorry, I've thrown you under the bus after you asked me a question.
No, that's all right. Yeah, I realize it's tit for tat. I like that, mate.
I know, it's coming back to me, isn't it, at some stage?
Yeah, yeah. So okay. I've got this really complex question I want you to tell me about. Just before we go, we're going to do some captaincies, Pistol. I think this is a pretty easy week for me in terms of chucking the VC on English on the Friday night against, yes, he's going to be against Darcy, but his consistency this year, rain, hail or shine, has been incredible. Wet or dry, he's gone 134, 139, 139, 145, 139. Like, the consistency there is freakish. So I think he's an easy VC for me on the Friday night. Hey, yay, we got no Thursday footy. And I think that that opens up many, many possibilities for our captaincy option from that point on. Like, even a Laird against Hawthorn would probably be the next person that I'm looking at in my side.
English will get 139. I won't need to worry about a captain. So yep, that's what I'm going to rely on. But if I'm forced into picking another player, I mean, it's pretty tempting if I bring in Tuke Miller to go with Tuke against North Melbourne. But
yeah,
can you really say no to Dacos against Essendon in Anzac Day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's going to be massive.
I don't know if I can say no to that. That's pretty good. There's a lot of actually really good options this week. I mean, I'm not even talking about Laird against, you know, Hawthorn, or Oliver against Richmond, Dunkley against GWS without Green. Like,
there's going to be some massive scores this week, I reckon.
Like, well, you've jinxed it now.
No, but I mean, like, even Dawson against Hawthorn is going to be a decent captaincy option. I think this week, and I'm definitely not trying to jinx it, the majority of people are going to snag a good captaincy score, would be my assumption.
Oh, man, why? Why
would, like, you, I really that think there? That everyone in the competition is going to get a fantastic 140-plus captaincy score.
Okay. Oh, God. Okay, thanks, Cheese. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to
I can see
to my,
you cringing through the camp.
My two 80s. That's going to happen with my captain, vice captain.
Mate, I had a 50 in round one. What are you complaining about?
Oh, the 50 as well, but yeah. Anyway, any other topics, Cheezo, or are we wrapping this one up?
I just might finish off what my plans are. I think I'm going to boost this week. I'm going to get two rookies and an upgrade, and I still can't decide between Parrish and Sinclair.
And who are you trading out?
So I'm probably going to be doing Jinby, Baker and McKenzie.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at Jinby, McKenzie and either
Chandler.
Did you say
Baker? Just to switch up
Baker.
The profile. Okay.
Either Chandler or Baker.
So,
I
went McKenzie, Jinby and Baker, and you went Jinby, McKenzie and Baker. And the order is important.
No, look, the order is important. I might get into. I think I'm leaning that way clearly because I've spoken about it 10 times on this podcast already. I do think Sinclair is really good and will be a top six defender. And it will potentially, depending on how players score, let me get Sicily the week after. So I need to take that into account as well. So something to keep in the back of my mind. But I already have Canelio, so otherwise I would have got him.
Perfect. Pistol, thanks for sitting down for the recap of round 5 for Supercoach in 2023. Don't forget, you can find us on the socials on Dr_SC, Cheezo_DRSC, Pistol_DRSC, and JB_DRSC. You can check out the merch store, which also has a little section where you can put in audio notes. So if you've got a question that you want featured on a future podcast, you want to hear your voice as we reply to you live, and you've got a question to throw Pistol under the bus, let me know.
Oh dear.
You can also do that, and you can check out any of the other content that we've got out there, either on patreon.com/DrSupercoach or YouTube. You can find us over
or Code
there
Sports
as well.
You can find our article on there.
That's
every
right
week. Doctor's Orders
shout
article.
shout out to Kano that puts in some fantastic hours doing those really, really good articles. And Pistol, thanks for sitting down. Community, thanks for listening. We'll catch you all in the next episode.